Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. From WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Every July, tens of thousands of cocktailians flock to New Orleans from across the world for 5 full days of education, networking, and of course, drinking. That's just what goes on at the annual Tales of the Cocktail. The Louisiana Eats team sets up our studio in a suite at the Monteleone Hotel, the epicenter of tales, and there we get to speak with some of the most interesting people in the world of spirits. So this week, we're taking you with us to Tales of the Cocktail. We'll meet Kate Gerwin, a red-headed tattooed marvel who was the first American and the first female to win the prestigious Bowls Around the World competition. Then, we'll travel from Italy to Japan to learn about the drinking culture there. Finally, we'll have a visit with the culinary cocktail magician who is Louisiana's own Adam Seeger. But wait, then a real magician shows up to put the icing on the cake. It's bottoms up and down the hatch on this week's Louisiana Eats. From the moment I laid eyes on Kate Gerwin, I could tell she has a way of shattering expectations. From her striking red hair and tattooed head to her astonishing success creating a cocktail scene in Bismarck, North Dakota, Kate is challenging all kinds of industry standards. She's also the first American and first female Bowls Around the World champion. That's B-O-L-S, the name of the liquor company from Amsterdam that's been around since 1575. Kate took a break from the spirited scene at the Hotel Monteleone to discuss her career owning and operating award-winning establishments and the story behind Girls with Bowls, her game-changing mentorship program for female bartenders. Kate, you have had a very interesting life because you didn't start out your life in spirits. You started out in wine. So tell me how you transitioned from one place to another.
Well, I grew up in wine country in California, in Sonoma and Napa. So it was just natural in the hospitality industry to gravitate towards wine. I was honestly a cellar rat. I used to shovel grapes. I was usually the only female in the cellar. It was physical work, very fun, very demanding. I also worked as a sommelier at some restaurants where I met my ex-husband, who is a chef. And when we decided to open our own restaurant, we moved to New Mexico. And we opened a restaurant which was really supposed to be a fine dining wine-focused restaurant. However, in New Mexico, wine isn't really in the forefront. Cocktails are, especially margaritas, fresh juice cocktails, tequila, things of that nature. So it wasn't really something that I made a conscious decision for. It was something that I kind of started to gravitate towards because that's what my guests wanted. They wanted more cocktails. What I came to discover was that with wine and being a sommelier, I basically am given a creative dish from a chef and an expression from a winemaker, and I have to find a match within what two creative people have created. I have to think about a vintage and a year and a climate and how it's going to have the acidity levels, how it's going to match or complement a dish. When I started really gravitating towards cocktails, I realized that my chef could give me a dish, and I didn't have to struggle to find the right grape varietal or the right region or the right vintage. I could just create a cocktail that had the perfect levels of acidity, the right flavors to complement the dish, and then I got the chance to be creative instead of taking two creative outlets and trying to marry them. I started making my own cocktails, and it was something I never looked back on.
Well, you really got extra good super fast at making your own cocktails because you were the first female champion in 2014 of the Bowls Bartending World Competition. What was that contest like?
It's intense. They call it like the Olympics of bartending because it starts with over 3,000 bartenders from 70 different countries. I mean, it's huge. When they narrow it down to the top 18, it takes 4 months. And 4 months of different levels of competition. It's not just bartending. It's not just creating a cocktail and submitting a recipe. There's menu development. There's operations questions. There's speed and efficiency. So there's all kinds of things. They narrow it down to the top 18, and those 18 are flown out to Amsterdam. From there, there's still a whole nother week of competition. Every day is new challenges. Then they narrow it down to the top 8, which go to what they call the big show. And the big show is televised. It's a huge event. It's on stage. And that's when we get to showcase our bartending skills. It's a little bit more about style and creating the perfect cocktail and entertaining our guests. Because for me, being the perfect bartender is not just about making a good cocktail and walking away. It's about giving the whole experience to a guest and entertaining them. People don't go out to bars to just have a drink. They want the experience. I threw a little style and a little couple of things that I do with some pours, and I was very, very blessed. My competition was fierce, and I took home the prize. I was shocked. I definitely cried a lot.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very good work.
Well, you know, when I won the Bulls Around the World Championship, Bulls sat me down and talked to me about my experience and asked me what I really wanted to achieve in 1 year. And when they actually the ones that told me, they said, you know that you're the first female world champion, and not just for bowls. Like, I'm the first. And they said, how does that make you feel? Like, I was supposed to have so much pride. And the first thing I said to them is, I said, it kind of makes me want to cry. And they were like, well, why? Like, that's so silly. And I'm like, no. Women have been bartending for a long time. I mean, Ada Coley and all these people who pioneered women bartending. And I'm the first? Me? That's kind of disappointing. And when we talked about why and the industry standards and competitions especially, we did a little bit of research, and we came to find out that in the United States, over 60% of the bartenders in the United States are women. So over half of all bartenders are actually women. However, when it comes to competitions, only 17% of women are competing. And we kind of broke that down in the idea of that competitions come from a certain level of bartending. It tends to be that women are hired for their assets and
yes,
not their brain. And that to me was a big red flag. We needed some strong female mentors in really big markets to pioneer a new path for bartenders, for female bartenders, to learn the craft. So what we did is we started a program called Girls with Bulls. And it was kind of a play for me just to be kind of funny and make a joke about it. We picked pioneering women in 5 different markets, which we're actually expanding now because it's been so successful. And these women take on an active female mentorship role in the responsible mentorship. And we do charity events. We talk about things like family planning, because that's something that people don't think about. We can be mothers and be bartenders at the same time. Financial planning, tax processing, things of those nature. We talk about businesses. We talk about health and health insurance and how to get those things. And it's not just for females, but we really try and give the young girls in the industry the idea of this can be a career. This can be a viable way of making money and being happy and not giving up the rest of your life and really being successful in it. So I just kind of feel like we're pioneering something new.
So tell me a little bit about, really and truly, Kate, how did you get to Bismarck?
Believe it or not, Bismarck is one of the largest booming economies in the U.S. right now. They do have a huge oil boom, a very surging and growing economy. They're expected to grow over 10% in the next 5 years, which is a lot. The industry itself, there's a doctor who is in Bismarck. He's also a state legislator, and their liquor licenses are released one per 10 years, and he happened to get his hands on the one new one. Well, such a booming economy and one liquor license, you want to go big or go home.
Yeah.
I mean, you do. You're like, I'm going to do something, and I'm going to do it big. And it's been amazing because I think for me the benefit, people ask all the time, why are you in North Dakota, you know, world champion? And I tell them all the time is, you know, being able to change and see the change in the way a culture drinks is one of the most gratifying things I could ever explain. You're in New York. Everyone knows. Most people, they know their drinks. On every corner, there's a craft cocktail bar. Being able to walk into a small market and introduce the differences in ice, the difference in fresh juice versus sour off a gun, and actually changing the way an entire community views the way they're drinking their cocktails is amazing. And it's not that you want to be the only one in a small town doing something, because then you're just one cool place. It's when you see the change in the guests, and then the other bars start to change, and the other bars start to adopt your tactics. Because it's not a competition. You want to raise the bar for everyone, because then that's when you really get well known. So it's the simple things like we make our own tonic. Well, the first couple weeks, people come in and they order the tonic, a gin and tonic, and they look at them, well, this is brown or this is that. And then you explain to them the process. Well, we use cinchona bark and this is a natural tonic. Then a month or two later, people are coming and going, you know, I can't drink gin and tonics anywhere else because they are understanding what they're drinking. Next thing you know, other bars around town are adopting those practices. So it's one of the most satisfying things about being a bartender is walking in to an area and without being pretentious and without pointing out what you're saying they're doing wrong, because they're not doing anything wrong. They're just doing something different.
Right.
But being able to change that kind of market is one of the most gratifying things.
What was the time period that you estimate it took to start to see things turn around?
4 to 6 months.
That fast?
So fast.
That's shocking.
So fast. We're population about 80 to 90,000. So it is a small community. We're travels.
Well, Kate, when you and I hadn't met each other, and we were rendezvousing out at the wild party in the street in front of the Monteleone, you said, oh, you really can't miss me. I have red hair and my head's tattooed too. So this is quite a look. You're working
it
here.
It is.
Tell me about this look that you've got going on.
Well, I've always had tattoos. I love tattoos, clearly. But I never actually had them in what I call scene territory until I owned my own business, until I became successful. Not because of myself, but just understanding. Preconceived notions and things like that. When I felt like I had finally really established who I was and that I knew that I was confident in my actions and my mind and my brain and my power, I started doing what I had always wanted to do, was tattooing, you know, my arms and things like that. At first, it was a little difficult. At first, it was different as people reacted to me and I could see the reactions. But now I love it. I own it. It's part of who I am. And part of the things I love about it is I like being underestimated. I like it when people meet me and they kind of like look up and down and then I start to talk and they're like, oh my God, she's really smart and I can learn from her and she's fun and, you know, she's not pretentious and she has a really good time.
Well, Kate, this has been such an incredible pleasure.
Well, it's been great.
I look forward to seeing you again and
you
again
miss
at Tales of the Cocktail.
I'll be here every year.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Kate Gerwin, the 2014 Bowls World Bartending Champion. When we return from a short break, we're traveling the spirited world from Italy all the way to Japan. Stay tuned. What does strength and say as you pass me on your way? Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from the Napoleon House, historic charm in the heart of the French Quarter, home of the Pimm's Cup cocktail and the toasted muffalata. Lunch, dinner, and private events at 500 Charter Street.
Arigato gozaimasu. My name is Gardner Dunn. I'm the senior ambassador for Beam Suntory Japanese Whiskey Portfolio.
Fine drinking culture in Japan is radically different from ours here in New Orleans. But during Tales of the Cocktail, these two worlds collide when Suntory whiskey enters the picture. We got a chance to meet Gardner Dunn, who explained Suntory's vivid history and took us into the lives of the Japanese businessmen and women who frequent highball bars in Japan. Gardner began by explaining to us how a blue-eyed American boy got into the Japanese whiskey game.
You know, when I first got into the bartending scene, I guess maybe almost 12 years ago, I really just actually started falling in love with brown spirits. Now, at this time, I had tasted Yamazaki, which was actually the only whiskey from Suntory actually in the United States, what struck me was how unique it was and how elegant it was, subtle, refined, and complex whiskey, and got me really into learning about whiskey and the brown spirits.
You kind of spilled the beans when you came in. Before this, you were a drummer?
I was a drummer on tour with a couple different bands. I was on the Warped Tour for a couple years, Elvin Bishop, Freddie Johnson, Bouncing Souls, Memphis Scofflies, The Toasters. So I was a ska drummer. And when I wasn't drumming, I was living in New York. And what better way to have 3 months off in between tours but to bartend and, to be honest with you, meet girls. But honestly, it was the only way to really be able to have a flexible schedule and also make money. And then that just kind of, I love to cook. So the culinary side of me and then the whole, I guess, mixology, but we all hate that word. I wanted to become a better bartender and I wanted to become more knowledgeable about whiskey and about all spirits. So that was the best way for me to do it, was to bartend in New York for almost 13 years.
Gardner, I'm fascinated by this history because I had no idea the Japanese had such a long tradition of whiskey, something that most people think of as an American spirit.
You know, it's really interesting. And actually, to really break it down, our founder, Shinjiro Tori, wanted to make whiskey for the Japanese palate. So 1905, he launched a fortified port wine called Akadama. And that's what really, you know, you need actually a neutral spirit to make fortified wine. So he had neutral spirit sitting in casks. He had never known about whiskey. With a neutral grain spirit in oak, there's a natural maturation that happens. So he actually noticed that that neutral spirit was actually changing. And he fell in love with that, and he also fell in love with blending. So when he made Akadama, and they made a lot of money, he used that capital to start the distillery in 1923.
Well, I am completely fascinated by the drinking culture in Japan. So let's fast forward to the 21st century. What's the whiskey drinking culture like there now?
So you have the working class, the younger generation that drinks their whiskey as a highball. But we think about whiskey sodas here. That's the misconception. When you go to Japan, you get a highball, and you get 1 ounce of whiskey, 4 ounces of soda. It makes for a crisp and clean cocktail. So the boom happened in the last 15 years in Japan with the highball.
Okay, well, take us into a Japanese bar. What's the scene like? How would it be if we were having a drink there right now?
Well, I would probably take you to a highball bar. Most of the time, you start out with a beer and then move on to a highball. So the coolest thing about Japan is that they have such great ice over there.
Really?
You know, all the time.
America's just catching on to the ice culture. How long has that been going on?
It's been going on, I don't know, forever. They don't believe in those fast ice machines. So they have like 15 different companies competing against each other. So I can order ice, the ice that you would see that Okamoto Studios or 100 Weight make, crystal clear. I could get it in any shape, whether it be shaking ice, whether it be cubes or whatever, but it's cheap and it's really made quality. I don't care if it's at a dive bar in Shinjuku or if it's in Ginza at Bar High Five, which one of the most amazing bartenders, Yuena-san, makes the ice diamond out of that ice. So either or, you're not going to get cheap ice, and you're not going to get fast melting ice. You're going to get that beautiful crystal clear ice.
You know, we hear these tales about how the Japanese businessman, he finishes work, like long work hours, 12 days, whatever he does. He goes to the bar. He drinks in the bar. They have sometimes their own bottles of whiskey in a bar.
As a businessman, you know, you have your commute and you know where you're going to kind of go. There is a sense of, an ownership of a bar that you go to. So, yes, we have the bottles, which we have necklaces on. So they're bottle necklaces. And they say your name. So you can buy the bottle and you get your name around it. So if you don't finish it that night, when you come back in, I can just drink off my bottle. I still have a standing bottle every year where I buy a bottle of Jim Beam, $50 for the bottle. It has my name on it. I drink half of it with my coworkers. I come back in 6 months, it's still waiting for me. And trust me, there's not a lot of room on that back bar, so it took him about a year and a half to trust me.
Uh-huh.
He's like, are you coming
back? I know
back?
You were coming back.
Are you coming back? Because I don't have a lot of room for you.
Uh-huh.
And so I have to go there every time I go now. Just to show face and go, hey, I'm back, and I'm going to finish this bottle, and then I'm going to buy another one.
Well, thank you, Gardner. I'm so glad that we stole this little opportunity to sit down and have this little chat about the drinking life in Japan.
Oh, well, I appreciate your time, and thank you so much.
Gardner Dunn, National Brand Ambassador for Suntory. Year after year, Tales of the Cocktail affords us the unique opportunity to meet cocktailians and spirits producers from around the world. Many have been perfecting their craft for generations, and Leonardo Vina fits that description to a T. Leonardo's family has been making Lucano 1894, an Italian herbal liqueur called Amaro, for over a century. He took a break from his time at Tales to talk with us about the enduring legacy of his family's Amaro and its special recipe, which remains a secret even today.
I'm Leonardo. I'm 31, and I come from the south of Italy. Actually, my region is Lucania. Amaro Lucano was founded by my great-grandfather, so I'm actually the fourth generation of the company.
Your great-grandfather began this business in
1894? 1894, yeah, he established the company. So they decided to move to U.S., but my great-grandfather changed his mind, and he decided to attend the Salernitanian School, one of the best botanical school at the time. So he invented a lot of recipes. And at the beginning, when he established the company, Lucano was created for selling, but for his friends, family. It was like a medicine.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God, we have a big archive of all the labels, the very old labels. Some of them have a suggestion. Please drink Lucano, suggested by the most important medician in Italy.
The most important doctors recommend this good medicine.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible.
So your great-grandfather passes the business to your grandfather?
To my grandfather and his brother. Uh-huh. They were two. They were Leonardo and Giuseppe. And the two brothers, thanks to them, Lucano became one of the most important liquor company in Italy. My grandfather passed away 25 years ago, and the company and also the recipe, because the recipe is very important, it's still secret.
Of course
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, still secret.
How many people actually know
actually
the recipe?
100%, only my father knows the 100% of the recipe. You know, the exact combination of the essential oils.
You mean he hasn't shared it with you yet?
Yeah, not yet. I know what he's doing. I don't know exactly the combination. And also, I hope one day me and my brother will know the recipe too. Yeah,
I would hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. Otherwise, I don't know what I can do in my life. I don't know.
So, I know it's a secret, but how many herbs actually go into Amaro Lucano?
Lucano have more than 30 herbs, actually 34, and 10 essential oils. All the herbs come from different parts of the world. We think that at the beginning, of course, the production, the number of the bottles were few. So my great-grandfather was able to find all the botanicals around Pistici, who is my hometown. And he found some of the herbs also in Naples. Now, of course, thanks to the climate change, the increase of production, it's impossible to find all the botanicals in Italy. So we buy them around the world. Yeah.
When do you drink Amaro in Italy?
In Italy, we used to drink Amaro at the end of a meal, because all the herbs inside the Amaro, in the Lucano, of course, help your digestion and make you feel better, you know.
Yeah, you've had a big meal, and yeah, so it helps you digest and maybe yeah, not feel so stuffed.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can also have the Amaro as an aperitivo. If you mix the Amaro with some soda water, uh-huh, you can have a delicious aperitivo. Of course, now we are trying to, and we are saying to the people that you can use the Amaro as a base for cocktails.
Of course.
In Italy, it's a little bit different because we have this heritage. But I know that in US, you guys are very smart. You understand very soon that the Amaro can be a good ingredient for cocktails.
Oh, it can be a magic little ingredient in a well-mixed cocktail. So let's just drink a little of this delicious Amaro together. How about it?
First cheers, yeah.
Of course, first cheers. And then,
salute,
it?
Salute.
Salute, yeah. Okay. Salute. I want to make sure I'm doing it right the Italian way. Okay, and so then we check out the nose.
Yeah, first of all, the nose. Chocolate, vanilla, orange. And then when you drink, at the beginning you can feel all the sweet, but at the top of your palate, you can also feel the bitter. It's a very well balanced profile.
It's a beautifully balanced profile, and it also, it's so aromatic.
It's very lingering also. They can accompany you for all day.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Well, I just want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's such a treat to have you visit us with your delicious Amaro Lucano all the way from southern Italy.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. And cosa vuoi di più della vita? Means, what more could you want from life? Just have a Lucano.
Leonardo Vina, the fourth generation of Lucano, 1894. What are the combination of herbs that give Amaro its complex bitter flavor? Even though it's a tightly kept secret in Leonardo Vina's family, we'll shed some light on that when we come right back. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and by French Market Coffee. Every premium blend of French Market Coffee contains a richness that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Made from the finest beans, slow roasted in small batches, only one coffee captures the bold flavor of our one-of-a-kind city. French Market Coffee. New Orleans. Bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What are the combination of herbs that give Amaro its complex bitter flavor? Anise, sage, mint, rosemary, allspice, and cloves are all included. And these familiar ingredients are probably already on your spice shelf. But gentian root is the vital ingredient that gives Amaro its bitter edge. Gentian is an herb that grows wild in temperate mountainous regions of central and southern Europe. Known for its beautiful blue or violet-colored trumpet-shaped blossoms, its roots are said to be one of the bitterest substances in the world. They're used in medicines, particularly for heartburn and other digestive troubles, but they're also used in cooking. It's one of the ingredients in Angostura bitters, and of course, essential in making Amaro. Curious to do some experimenting with gentian? You can find it in Latin groceries, and of course, online. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Every year, one of my Tales of the Cocktail highlights is getting to spend time with my amazing friend, Adam Seeger. Louisiana-born artistic mixologist, Adam's always got something new and compelling to share. And last year, he revealed one of the newest ingredients in his culinary cocktail bag of tricks, Perigord Truffle Bitters, something he's dubbed Truffe Amer. Adam, talk to me about your relationship with the truffle and why this is the latest thing from Adam Seeger.
Well, a little over 12 years ago, I started buying ingredients from a gentleman in Chicago, Rod Marcus, whose warehouse rarity cellar is literally been described by Andrew Zimmer from Bizarre Foods as Indiana Jones' pantry. From all corners of the earth, he has over 4,000 different botanicals from teas and herbs and roots and spices, but he also imports fresh truffles. In the wintertime, from France, and December, for just a short time, fresh white Alba truffles from Italy.
Wow.
And then in our summer here is actually winter in Australia and Tasmania, who is now, because of the oak trees and because of the climate, producing amazing winter black truffles. And so I was at the warehouse, this was about 3 years ago, and Rod had all of these beautiful glass apothecary jars full of vodka and truffles. And what I was amazed was that when you add a truffle at its peak to a neutral spirit, it literally captures time.
It does.
That peak of aroma, it doesn't change what's in the spirit. And in fact, we have aged vodka infusions going back to 2002 that literally taste like the truffle you just got that the day before.
Incredible. And so how did you figure this out? Or was it just another Adam Seeger mad scientist experiment?
There was definitely some mad science in there. So we decided, well, how can we do something with this and kind of bring this to market? And the idea really was inspired into bitters, because bitters add complexity and a balance to both cocktails and food. And we wanted to have something that was also kind of transportable and that we could also capture that time. Similar to all the age-old types of preservation that we find from drying shrimp to canning. In this case, we're using the vodka as a way to capture it. So we took the vodka that actually we're now using a potato vodka, potatoes and truffles, kind of natural combination culinary world.
Happy marriage.
So it's 151 proof potato vodka from Boyd and Blair. Really special because they start with only local potatoes, the distilleries in Western Pennsylvania. They ferment it with champagne yeast, which is a much slower fermentation, about 12 to 14 days, then hand distilled in a copper pot still, and then we take these fresh truffles and we steep them into the 151 spirit. It's literally a blank canvas, a sponge for all those flavors. And then also some black walnuts. Black walnuts are going to give a beautiful kind of earthiness, a little natural bitterness. We've got some roasted spices, and that all combines to be Truffe Amer. So literally, bitter truffle would be the translation.
Delicious. Well, you know, it makes me laugh because when I first laid eyes on you during your visit down here, you were in the lobby of the Monteleone Hotel passing out cochon potato chips with slices of black truffle and your Truffe Amer bitters on it. That was a crazy thing to see in the lobby of the Monteleone or any place else.
Well, it was great fun. We wanted to combine the cocktail world and the culinary world. That's always been a passion of mine growing up in South Louisiana, loving food, loving cooking, and now being a mixologist and a bartender, it was a chance to take a cocktail bitters but combine it with a very savory bite and kind of cross those boundaries and hopefully inspire people to look a little different about how you can use bitters, and especially a truffle bitters, not just for a cocktail, but beautiful in the kitchen and beautiful just kind of have on your person whenever you have something savory and umami and you want a little affordable luxury to drop on top, then Truffe Amer, go for it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you say have on your person, because I could see people just packing that beautiful little bottle along like they do their portable Tabasco bottle. So I have to ask you, I mean, that's the craziest looking bottle I've ever seen. Adam, where'd you get that little bottle?
Well, it looks like the Leaning Tower of Pizza. and it's a hand-blown Italian glass that we brought in. We wanted to have something really unique. And it holds 55 milliliters of one of the most luxurious little elixirs, along with a old school apothecary glass eyedropper. So precisely, you can add as many drops as you'd like on a little bite of dried shrimp or on a Ramos Gin Fizz or a Manhattan or wherever your mind takes you.
On your finger, if you'd like.
It's delicious on your finger, yes.
And the purpose, the uses of this are absolutely endless because they bridge the culinary world, the cocktail world. Tell me some of your favorite experiments that you've come up to so far with Truffamare.
Well, the first event we did with it was actually with Chef Eric Repair. Every year, if you have a chance to get down to Cayman Island at the Ritz-Carlton, Eric does what he calls the Cayman Cookout. And it's some of the top chefs from all over the world come down and just cook amazing food in the Caribbean. And so his restaurant, Blue, at the Ritz, we did an Armagnac cocktail with some Seville orange, kind of a twist on a sidecar, and finished the truffle bitters on top. And it kind of went back to that old adage, what grows together goes together. Armagnac and truffles grow in that kind of Perigord region of France. And that's kind of where we started. And the one that we found has been the most delightful are soup dumplings. You do a really rich consommé that is actually to the point that it's solidified when it's at room temperature. You stuff that into a dumpling, and when you steam it, then it turns to soup. So you have a spoonful of this with a truffamare on top, and it's this explosion of pork consommé and a little bit of dumpling dough and the truffamare. That's a real treat. It definitely is, and that's something you can just take with you and kind of upgrade. Even fried rice is fantastic, wonton soup. But from there, we started experimenting. And actually, down here in Louisiana, we've taken one of the most iconic drinks, besides the Sazerac, is, of course, the Ramos Gin Fizz.
You've got Truffamare in the Ramos Gin Fizz? How does that work?
This was an experiment, actually, this year at Tales of the Cocktail. The starting week party was at the new Museum of the American Cocktail. It's absolutely gorgeous to see where the museum has progressed to. And they're doing, of course, a beautiful Tanqueray 10 Ramos Gin Fizz. And with a proper Ramos, with the egg whites and the cream on top, you have a layer that just will sit there for the entire drink.
A platform.
Exactly. And so we had a straw in that, of course. And then we put the Truffamare on top. So you're tasting a Ramos Gin Fizz through the straw, but you're smelling fresh truffles as you do it. It was the most sublime experience.
Well, Adam, once again, you have created magic in a bottle. So thank you so much for bringing that magic to us here at Louisiana Eats.
My pleasure. Thank you, Poppy.
Adam Seeger, mixologist in residence at the Art Institute of Chicago.
Free spirits roaming to and fro, you'd better make room for me. My baby's got me on the go, and I'm ready as I can be.
If you haven't guessed it yet, that Adam Seeger is a culinary cocktailian mad genius who's always concocting something brand new. Everyone's familiar with the after-dinner drink, limoncello. Well, Adam makes something he calls baconcello. Curious? Well, here's how he does it. First, he fully cooks 7 slices of the best quality, thick-cut, super premium smoked bacon. All the excess fat is removed, and the bacon gets roughly torn apart. Then, he combines 2 chopped cored green apples to the bacon and pours a 1/5 of good quality vodka on top. The whole shebang goes into the refrigerator to macerate for 72 hours. Strain off the bacon and the apples and discard them. If there's any excess fat visible, remove that as well. Adam crafts a fantastically refreshing cocktail with his baconcello by combining 1.5 ounces of the infused vodka with the juice of 1 fresh lime and 1/2 ounce of the finest maple syrup you can find. And of course, a crispy strip of bacon serves as garnish. You can find a copy of Adam's baconcello recipe on our Louisiana Eats website at itsneworleans.com and wwno.org. I'm Poppy Tooker, and Adam Seeger's baconcello makes for some great Louisiana drinks. You meet the most curious sorts of people at Tales of the Cocktail. Among the scores of mixologists and brand ambassadors we've encountered, we also ran across Josh Beckerman, a New York-based blogger, comedian, and self-proclaimed foodie magician. Josh showed off his sleight of hand, and we found ourselves spellbound.
My shows, Poppy, are about entertainment and connection. Everybody in the universe is connected. We're all connected. We're here right now. You, me, Poppy, Joe, you sound guy. Are you ready for a trick?
I'm ready.
Good. So do you have a bill on you, Pops?
I'm a girl. I don't have a wallet.
Does anyone in the room? Whoa.
Oh.
Here's your assistant. Joey comes through. You have a. This is a $10 bill. Can you fold the bill in your hand? I don't want anyone to see it but you. And what kind of phone do you have, Poppy?
I have an iPhone.
Take out your iPhone and go into the calculator, please.
Okay.
Now, Joe, when is your birthday?
August 2nd.
August 2nd is your birthday. So into Poppy's calculator, for a phone, I want you to put 802. Go ahead.
All right.
Good. Poppy, I want you to hit the multiply sign. Just hit multiply.
Multiply. Right.
And then put any random three-digit number that only you know. Only any random three-digit number. And don't tell Joe, but can you see the total on the calculator? Don't say it. Can you see it? It's a big total, right?
It's a big total.
Joe, in your hand is a bill that you just took out, right? It's right. Folded up in your hand. What was the denomination? A 5 or a 10?
10.
Look at the serial. Every bill in the world has a unique serial number. Look at the serial number of the bill, okay? And what's the first number?
9.
Okay, what's next?
3.
Next?
5.
Next?
3.
Yeah?
2, 8, 4, 8.
Can you tell the audience what's the number on the calculator now?
9353288. You're scaring me, Josh.
Poppy, the numbers that you guys just multiplied equaled the serial number of the bill that Joe just took out from his pocket. You guys are getting foodie magished. Unbelievable. Magic.
Okay, now, where's the food come in, Josh?
Well, I usually make food disappear all day. That's my big trick. I just made a clam pie disappear from Domenica Restaurant, which was amazing. Chef Alon Shia and Chef John Bash, you guys are killing it. All right, so let me try this. I see you have your phone out there.
Yes.
Go into the contacts of your phone.
Okay, I'm there.
Great. You're going to take the phone. You're going to hold it upside down. You're not going to look.
Okay.
You're going to start scrolling. You can go one way, the other way. Start scrolling.
Okay.
And select a name. So you selected a name at random from your phone. Do you know this person?
Yes.
I have a lot of random people on my phone. I want you to think about this person in your mind, okay? Don't say a thing. I'm going to ask you a couple questions. Number one is, when was the last time you saw this person?
3 years ago.
3 years ago, okay. Does our friend Joe here know this person, yes or no?
No.
No, okay. And is this someone you know through work?
No.
No. How do you know this person?
Family.
A family member? Is this a cousin of yours?
It's a cousin-in-law.
A cousin-in-law. How would I know that? Could have been your uncle. I'm killing it. So right now you're thinking of, in your mind, a person you just chose randomly from your phone. You haven't seen this person in 3 years. It's a cousin-in-law. And this is crazy. I do mind reading around the world. Poppy, are you thinking of a male?
Yes.
Oh, my God. How would I know that? Mentalist. No, wait. That's not the trick. That's my big 50-50 joke. Here's the thing. Poppy, Joe, what you guys don't know is, before I was here, I was eating a clam pie at Domenica Restaurant. It was amazing. I paid the bill, and I was thinking about the pie. I was like, wow, that pie was amazing. I had fried Tuscan kale. It was delicious. And all of a sudden, I had a vision of a name. I had a vision of a name an hour ago. I was like, wow, I got to write this down. I took out my wallet. I took out a business card. I wrote down one name in the back of one card, and put it in my wallet an hour ago. Poppy, we met for the first time today. I've never touched your phone. You could have chosen anyone right now, but right now you're thinking of your cousin-in-law. It's a male. I'm going to have Joe. Joe, and tell the audience what's going on. Joe, in my wallet is a card.
So he pulls out his wallet. He pulls out a card.
Joe's taking a Joe took out a card.
He's got the card. Joe's got the card.
Is there a name in the back? Yes or no?
There is a name in the back.
Yeah. What's the name of the person you're thinking of? Say it out loud so the audience hears.
Ryan Furby.
What does the card say, Joe? Say it out loud.
Ryan Furby.
What does that say? What does it say in the back? It says, Ryan Furby, the name of your cousin-in-law was written on the back of my card that I wrote back an hour ago because I had a vision because that clam pie was so good. It gave me visions.
Okay, you're freaking me out. I got to tell you the truth. You're freaking me out.
Awesome.
Okay. What's your best shot, baby?
My best shot? Maybe Jameson or Johnny Walker Black? What? You mean best trick? You mean, like, the tricks I've done so far aren't that amazing?
They are amazing. You're, like, batting 1,000.
If that's Ryan Furby at the door, I'm going back to New York, and I'm crying forever.
No, wait. Here. We're going to have a special appearance on the radio now. Madeline Mulladew, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mama. Thank you.
Mama? Is that your daughter?
That's my daughter.
Oh, my God. I feel like a part of the family. This is amazing.
What's your number?
You asked me before your daughter walked in about my favorite best shot, and my best shot I was about to do, and I had no idea that your beautiful daughter was gonna walk in. Here she comes in like a little angel flying in,
and she's kind of magic, isn't
she? She's kind of magic. But my best shot is really the true form of connection. And then Joe and Poppy, I want you to watch this because here's the thing. Your name is Madeline. Oh, my God, how would I know that? Mentalist. And I heard Poppy say it 30 seconds ago. Stand up, Madeline. Stand up. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to take my business card, okay? Poppy and Joe, I'm taking the business card. I'm going to touch Madeline. I'm going to touch you with the card, okay?
Be careful with that.
I am. I want you to, Madeline's eyes are going to be closed. Not yet. Madeline, you will be aware of every touch, every sensation. The only thing is your eyes are closed, okay? Madeline, open your eyes for a second. 1, 2, 3, close your eyes. Are your eyes closed?
Yes.
Okay, so listeners... Right now, Madeline's eyes are closed. I'm going to take the card, okay? I'm going to touch you with the card. The question is this. Madeline, did you feel a touch?
Yes.
Where?
On my nose.
Yes, I touched your nose. Good. Keep your eyes shut. Can you hear my voice?
Yeah.
I have one question. Madeline, you felt a touch?
Yes.
Where?
Above my eyebrow.
Yeah. Ooh, Poppy's laughing. Keep your eyes shut. Can you hear my voice, yes or no?
Yes.
I have a question. Did you feel a tickle?
Yes.
Where?
Under my chin.
Hey, your eyes are definitely shut, right?
Yes.
I have a question. Did you feel a touch?
No.
Oh, good, good, good. Open your eyes. Open your eyes. Stop. Now, Poppy,
yes.
Your listeners are listening and you couldn't see what just happened, but you and Joe saw. Can you tell Madeline and your audience what just happened?
Yes. When she felt her nose being rubbed, you were doing that to my nose. When she felt her chin being rubbed, it was forehead being
Did
rubbed.
Did I touch Madeline at all?
No, never touched
I was touching
Madeline
you and Joe the entire time. I touched you guys
Madeline?
The entire time.
You're joking.
No, I didn't touch you at all. I was touching you, Poppy. I touched Joe. You felt the connection. You felt the sensation.
So
you
weird.
Guys are getting foodie magish. This is unbelievable. I need more to drink.
Josh Beckerman, foodie magician.
I fell in love with your body and soul. My sugar tastes sour, my salt tastes sweet. I wanna lay down, but I just can't sleep. It's your voodoo working. It's your voodoo working.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week when we take a break from the summertime heat and travel to the land of the midnight sun with legendary chef Magnus Nielsen.
The Nordic regions as such is not a cultural region. It's just a geographical construction. And you can just imagine the difference, you know, from, let's say, the southeastern parts of Finland, which borders on Russia, and then Greenland in the west.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, by the Palace Cafe, home of crab meat cheesecake and white chocolate bread pudding in the historic Worline Music Building on Canal Street, and by Toujek's Restaurant, home of America's oldest stand-up bar, now celebrating 160 years on Decatur Street. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.